Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. Gaia Lens is an AI-powered sustainability analytics program for institutional investors and financial services firms. Our guest in this Sustainable Finance Podcast episode is CEO and co-founder Gordon DeVito Duncan. He and his team offer a cutting-edge technology and the latest thinking in ESG through this innovative platform and a suite of tools to help investors fulfill their ESG portfolio reporting, investment screening, and deep dive research capabilities. Hello, Gordon, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hi, Paul. Great to be here.
We're glad you could join us today, and we're going to jump right into the questions because we've got a lot of ground to cover. So first, tell our followers how the Gaia Lens platform supports investors and asset managers through the whole ESG investment lifecycle.
Sure. We help asset managers with four main use cases: so ESG research, ESG reporting, controversy monitoring, and greenwashing risk assessment. Our platform starts with collecting lots of data, both structured, reported, and unstructured data in the form of news data. We collect structured data from company reports and specialist data providers like NGOs. And we use this structured data to calculate our proprietary ESG scores, which are refreshed every day. They're fully transparent, explainable, and objective, meaning data-driven. We don't take a subjective view of companies. And we score over 21,000 companies globally every day. We also track the news for these 21,000 companies daily, from business publications, national newspapers, trade publications, sustainability specialist publications, and NGO reports. And we use the latest LLM technology to process the articles and generate controversy scores and sentiment scores with explanations. And we have mappings to all the major sustainability frameworks, such as the SFDR, TCFD, UNSDGs, and EU taxonomy. And we make it really easy for our users to upload their investments and generate a PDF or Excel report in seconds. And regarding greenwashing, we combine our portfolio benchmarking and controversy detection workflows to assess the greenwashing risk of a portfolio or a fund.
Okay. Now, Gordon, I'm not sure all of our followers are familiar with the abbreviation LLM. Could you explain what that means and why it's necessary and important in your process?
Yeah, of course. So LLM stands for large language models. So these include all the quite well-known and popular releases in the last 2 years. So things like ChatGPT is an example of an LLM, Anthropic has Claude, and there are some other big ones as well. Meta has their own LLM. So these large language models, you may see them. The most common use case is really via some kind of chatbot. So a lot of these LLMs power chatbots that you'll see on your apps or on different websites. They're also increasingly being used in things like call centers and customer support as well. So really the first application that we use LLMs was to process the news, to give it essentially an article and ask it with respect to our framework of different sustainability controversy scores. Ask it to analyze and actually generate a score to try and ascertain some kind of risk level for a particular article. So in our use case, it works where we give, as I mentioned, collect lots of news from all around the world. We tag it to a particular company, and then we ask our LLM, or we prompt it to say, here's an article about Apple, for example. And we want you, here's our definition of these controversy scores and different sustainability factors. And we want you to analyze this article with respect to our framework and come up with a risk score. So we just generate a risk score from 1 to 10, 10 meaning an article has a higher risk of a controversy. So these might be business ethics violations. This might be some kind of scandal with the execs. On the environmental side, it might be, some scandal, for example, an oil spillage from a company or things like that. So that's really what we're trying to flag up and assess with our process.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that explanation. That was very helpful to me. You've said a couple of things that I was not familiar with related to LLMs as well. So how did the idea for Gaia Lens emerge from your team's broad expertise in AI and your experience in using it?
Well, the Gaia Lens journey really began with Seb's the other co-founder, and I meeting at university when we undertook a master's in data science in 2019. We were introduced to the ESG space through a fund manager's presentation, and we became really interested in the space. We then decided to focus our dissertations on ESG, in particular, using data science techniques to predict ESG ratings. And then through our research, we spoke to quite a few fund managers, and they all stated that ESG was going to become an increasing focus for them in the coming years. But they weren't happy with the incumbent providers, so MSCI, Sustainalytics, for example. And the same issues with these providers kept coming up, that their ratings are infrequently updated, they're opaque, they're subjective. Our dissertations went well, and then one fund manager in particular was interested in our work. So we proposed to work with them for 3 months to see if we could combine Seb's and my work to create something commercially viable. And we believe that we could use the latest thinking in ESG and technology to build something better than existing providers and help asset managers with their ESG challenges. And this 3-month sprint was successful, and we were able to create an MVP. And this really was the starting point of Gaia Lens.
Okay. So now, as of today, what do you see coming in? Well, first of all, 2024 is almost over. So in the rest of 2024 and 2025, what do you see as trends in ESG reporting and the sustainable investment space?
I think one of the main trends that we've seen this year is in the ESG investment space is increasing focus on ESG regulation and compliance. So from the conversations that we're having with asset managers, most of the ESG budget is going towards meeting regulatory requirements rather than ESG integration into the investment process, which might have been a bigger focus, say, 2 years ago. And some asset managers have been producing TCFD reports for a while, and a lot of European asset managers have been through their first SFDR reporting cycle last year. So the managers are more aware now of what data and ESG solutions they need to help them with this process. In general, I don't know if you've sort of felt this as well, but we've really been feeling some negative sentiment in the market as well, in the ESG investment space. And ESG budgets are tight, with many asset managers just doing the minimum work they need to comply with the various sustainability regulations and frameworks, like the TCFD, SFDR, and the new SDR, which affects UK fund managers. In general, I think another big trend is asset managers becoming increasingly concerned about being accused of greenwashing. And in response, many asset managers have downgraded their Article 9 SFDR funds. So these are the most sustainable funds as per the SFDR. And they've downgraded them to Article 8, so the level below. And generally, they're being a lot more cautious about launching new products with sustainability labels, particularly UK ones, which now have to get sustainability labels under the SDR. And I think a big thing next year will be which will have a knock-on effect to the financial services space, is the CSRD, which a lot of European companies have to report on. So that should, maybe not next year, but the year after, have a positive effect on the space, because disclosure from companies or sustainability disclosure should get a lot better, which will hopefully lead to investors trusting ESG data more and feeling more confident in doing more analytics and research and perhaps making more strategic changes and hopefully boost ESG integration again. So probably the CSRD is a big development next year in the wider sort of sustainable finance space.
Okay. Now, of course, you're in the UK, and there's a much deeper regulatory process at work in the UK and the EU than, for example, even in the US, where the SEC can't get their regs pushed through, and in other markets like the APAC markets, for example. So how do you work with companies that, for example, might be doing business in all of these various regulatory reporting regimes, and how do you support the integration of that process through your work?
Yeah, it is a big challenge. And that's why we try to have mappings to all the major sustainability frameworks. Despite differences in regions, there are some clear underlying data points which always seem to sort of overlap with different frameworks. So for us, it's a case of we see it very much as a new mapping. So as long as we have that mapping of what a particular region defines in terms of their sustainability frameworks, then we can help investors in different regions. So, I mean, in general, we're seeing definitely the sustainability regulatory burden is increasing for asset managers, particularly in the UK and Europe. And some of our clients spend up to 20 hours producing just one SFDR report, which affects European fund managers. For just one portfolio fund, they can spend that much time. It's a really demanding report to generate for investors, since it involves reporting on over 50 different metrics at the portfolio level. And so really for us, it's a case of making sure that we collect as much high quality data as possible. We have that mapping. We can get the highest coverage for investments as well. That's why we try and score and collect data for 21,000 companies globally. So we get that global coverage. We really are aiming through our system to reduce that 20 hours just to seconds. And you can imagine that actually saves thousands of hours of work per year if you have a fund manager that has 20, 30 different portfolios or funds and wants to refresh that data every quarter, say. That saves a lot of time. And so that's really what we're aiming to do with our software solution.
Okay. Now, of course, when you and I discuss investors, we're not just talking about the asset managers that are part of the regular market process on a day-to-day basis, but we're also talking about their investors who invest in their funds, who may be pension plans and high net worth individuals and even private markets as well. Do you cover that whole, all of those different groupings with your research for regulatory infrastructure?
Yeah, we do. So initially we started off targeting or try to work with sort of small to medium asset managers. But as our platform grew, we realized that actually with our capabilities, we could also help asset owners as well, which have arguably greater challenges, since they often have many different underlying investments across different asset classes, different regions, working with many different managers. And so it's very difficult for them often to get the data they need from different asset managers that may give them different kind of sustainability reports and different levels of detail. So it's often very challenging for asset owners to get that top level of allocation. So we've built that into our platform. So actually now you can see the allocation level, particularly relevant for a pension fund, say, the allocation level across all of their investments. So we allow them to upload all of their different funds. We also cover private markets, as you mentioned. So we actually have environmental data on 3.5 million private companies as well. We are able to map private companies. We also have different asset classes like bonds as well. So we are able to actually map a lot of asset owners' investments as well and get that top level of aggregation, which has historically been very difficult for them. I mean, even our controversies monitoring system as well is really helpful for them, because again, they have thousands of underlying investments. It's very difficult for them to keep track of exactly what's going on in the news or a particular controversy affecting their underlying investments. And they often have to, there's a sort of lag effect. There's a delay in getting that information from their managers when they report a controversy, which may be every quarter. And this is particularly important for pension funds who are working on behalf of their members, but also also organizations like foundations and charities as well, which often have a particular sustainability goal or like a social purpose. You know, they really want to be informed and kept up to date on whether their investments are aligned with that social purpose or sustainability goal. And that's also something we can help with, because we actually break down ESG or sustainability into many different themes that they can track and see if their investments are aligned with those themes. So we definitely are focused on the asset owner space as well.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. For all of that information. Let's talk now again. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into this and this whole idea of who the investors actually are. So depending on where those investors are affiliated and how they're investing, as you're suggesting, there's all kinds of possibilities with pension funds and private equity and you know, private investment and charitable organizations that might be investing money that donors have made as a gift to the organization. And what do in all of these, this broad swath of investors, what can they do to reduce or support the reduction of greenwashing and the information that they receive from asset managers? And also for me, let's say, in my pension fund, how can I reduce the potential for greenwashing in the funds that I'm investing in my pension fund? How does that work?
Yeah, it is a big challenge. And it's a ongoing issue for asset owners. And it's related to what I mentioned earlier in terms of the way they get that information. You know, the dependence on different asset managers with different kind of, that offer different levels of detail in their reports and perhaps not that frequently updating their asset owner clients. So managing greenwashing is really challenging, particularly for asset owners with thousands of underlying investments. I think the way we approach it, we have greenwashing screens at both the company level and the portfolio level or the fund level. So at the company level, really we are looking at greenwashing in terms of what a company says it's doing and what it's actually doing. So on our greenwashing screen, we are looking at what a company's targets are, for example, SBTI targets, which have been verified by the SBTI. And then we're seeing, for example, they might have a company might have a target to reduce its scope one emissions in the next 10 years by 30%. So what we do is actually then project its carbon emissions or its scope one emissions and actually see if it's on track to meet those targets or not. Because very often is the case, and countries do this as well, is it's quite easy to make targets or goals, but often not always such great scrutiny in actually seeing whether a company is likely to make those targets. So that's one way we look at it. We also look at, again, using our controversies output. So we track every time in the news that a company has been accused of greenwashing. Often banks are accused of greenwashing a lot because of their financed emissions. Energy companies, oil and gas companies are often accused of greenwashing because they might overstate their renewable energy production. And actually it's misleading for investors or consumers. So those are the things we try and track in our controversies output as well. So we're getting that up-to-date sort of information flow about whether a company has been accused of greenwashing. So that's sort of at the company level. And then we turn those data points into scores, easy to use scores for our users to try and indicate the risk level of greenwashing for a particular company. And for at the fund level, it's really a similar approach. We're looking at what a fund's sustainability claims or goals are, and then what it's actually doing. So whether its investments are actually aligned with those goals. And we've seen it a few times where there might be a fund which is a climate-focused fund and has quite explicit sort of net zero goals or transition goals in the medium to long term. And actually its underlying investments are not really changing their behavior to try and, you know, which might lead to meeting those targets or meeting those goals. So for example, we're looking at the fund level, we're comparing it to a market benchmark. So if a climate focused fund has, for example, a higher carbon footprint than a generic market benchmark, that raises a red flag in our system, because it's really surprising that a climate focused fund has a higher climate footprint than a benchmark. And we give it the benefit of the doubt. It may be the case that, again, it takes a long term view and it's transitioning. So we look at the short, medium, long term, and again, we project that carbon footprint over time. And then again, if it looks like it's still going to be higher than the market benchmark, that really raises a concern for us and something that we'd want to flag to our users. And again, we can use the controversies output to see if any particular investments within that fund, any holdings, are exhibiting negative behavior that might actually lead to the fund missing its sustainability goals or targets.
Okay, now here's a question that was not on the list, but I'm just thinking about does Gaia Lens ever engage directly, or more directly, I'd say, in shareholder advocacy issues, along with asset managers or fund managers or high net worth individuals? Do you ever work with companies that are doing that on an ongoing basis, and maybe even going to shareholder meetings and presenting shareholder resolutions at the company level directly? Do you get involved in any of that, or are people typically using your data and information to support that kind of process that they are doing?
Yeah, it's more the latter, really. We don't directly get involved in sort of shareholder resolutions and AGMs and things like that, but we definitely try and present our platform to our clients and the market in a way that they can leverage that to for their corporate engagement. So of course, corporate engagement is a crucial strategy for asset managers wanting to enact change in the industry. And is actually a lot more preferred than divesting from a company that they don't particularly like, or they feel like haven't met their target. So, yeah, corporate engagement is really important for sure for the space, and we want to support that as much as possible. So we do that with data, making our platform as easy to use as possible. We might actually build in a sort of corporate engagement tracker within our platform, although there's quite a lot of tools for asset managers out there to do that. But we definitely want to support corporate engagement as much as we can with our platform.
Okay, great. Yeah, and we just recently did a program where we were discussing this idea of corporate engagement and shareholder advocacy, and the power of even a small position of shares in a large company can be used to actively do that, as you know. And hopefully what Gaia Lens will continue to do is provide the kind of information that supports people who are engaged that way as well. So, Gordon, I really appreciate the time you've taken to be with us today on the Sustainable Finance Podcast. Tell our followers where they can go online to learn more about your work at Gaia Lens, and how can they get in touch with you about questions that they have on the issues that we've discussed in today's episode.
So you can go to our website, that's gaialens.com with a hyphen in between Gaia and Lens. So it's G-A-I-A hyphen Lens, L-E-N-S.com. You can find us on LinkedIn as well. We've got a company page on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. There's not many Gordon Twyter Duncans around, so should be the first one on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Very happy for your listeners to get in touch. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. So listen, if you have any documents like reports or annual programs that you participate in to update the people who are using your services that you can send us attachments to or links to, we would like to attach those to the full program so that our followers can do more homework around your focus and the work that you're doing on an ongoing basis. And I want to thank you once again, Gordon, for joining us in today's program. And I want to thank our followers for listening in. And I'm Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.